Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to Freedom of Species, where the show that brings animal advocacy to the airwaves of 3CR Community Radio. You just heard Sally with Out of the Pan, who is talking census and other news. And Sally finished up with the song If Ned Kelly Was King by Midnight Oil. On the show today, we are joined by two criminologists, both joining us for the first time on the show. Welcome to the show, Stephen. Stephen Burrell, welcome.
Thanks so much for having us, Nick.
And Cassie Peterson.
Hey, Nick, thanks for having us.
And today on the show, we'll probably get into a range of topics, but I think most of them will fit under the broad umbrella of gender and animals, and, yeah, lots of things within that, perhaps some connections in terms of treatment of women and treatment of animals, for example, and many other topics under that broad umbrella. And, yeah, we often start off when we have a guest on the show for the first time of... Yeah, it's talking about their animal journey, which I guess could include like a vegan story, but it can also be well before then. I know myself as a kid, I feel like my philosophy was pretty consistent with veganism, even though that wasn't how I was eating or consuming or living. But I feel like I already had those, you know, not wanting to harm animals. I feel like that's a pretty common view. So it can definitely go like well back before the vegan story. But because we're going to discuss gender as well, it'd be also interesting to hear your journey in terms of thinking about, I guess, gender and feminism and I guess more broadly human social justice issues. And yeah, did that come before the animal, after the animal? Yeah, either of you keen to go first to start things off?
After you, Stephen.
Okay.
Thanks, Cassie. Yeah, thanks, Nick. Well, yeah, for me, I suppose it did start particularly with feminism, actually. I mean, when I was a teenager, I kind of, you know, I was getting increasingly politicized. Mm-hmm. I mean, my parents were both trade unionists. And climate change, environmental issues were some of the first things which I started to kind of show an interest in as a teenager. But really, it was when I started studying sociology when I was about 16. I got a chance to, you know, learn about all these critical ideas, including feminism. I had a really, like, inspiring feminist teacher. And she just had a huge, huge impact on me. And those ideas had a huge impact on me. Mm. I think my parents were probably, you know, modeling quite a healthy, equitable, you know, relationship as well. So I was very lucky in that regard. And it just really helped to make sense of so much of what I was seeing around me and my own, you know, sense of discomfort with, I suppose, the kind of ideas and pressures about masculinity that I was, you know, expected to kind of fit in with as a boy. And so I guess gradually then, you know, in the years since then, I've kind of become more and more committed to thinking about, well, what can I do as a man, you know, to actually contribute to like feminist efforts for social change. And I suppose trying to address men's violence against women in society seemed like a really obvious place to focus my efforts, you know, in trying to speak out about that and talk to other men about it. That's been what my research has been about for most of my time working in academia. But I guess more recently, I was thinking more and more about environmental issues again and impossible to ignore the climate crisis. And also I have two young nieces and I was just thinking more and more about, you know, what kind of world are they going to be growing up in. So I was like, well, how can I maybe address that in some way in the work that I do? And so the more I started reading, actually, you know, there were many, many links between gender inequality, ideas about masculinity, and the way that we treat the environment. But it was really only then when I then met Cassie. So I started looking at those issues more in my research. And then I met Cassie, and she really challenged me as well to think bigger about these things. Because I think until that point, I was thinking about it in this quite ecocentric way. Mm. So basically thinking about, you know, the environment as this big entity and thinking, I care deeply about animals, but in that kind of broad kind of species sense, you know, not really thinking so much about like individual animal lives and stuff. And I think meeting Cassie really helped me to broaden my thinking about that. So I'd already been dabbling with vegetarianism and stuff, but more from that environmental perspective. Mm-hmm. But I guess through our conversations, that really led me to become committed to veganism. Primarily primarily because of care for non-human animals.
It's definitely a discussion we've had a lot on the show. I guess pushing back against, not necessarily pushing back against conservation, but pushing back against like a purely conservation lens in terms of if you're an individual who is being like harmed or killed, you don't care whether there's like 10 million of your species or whether you're the last one. Yes, like you've got individual interests. And I feel like a lot of the time, like a purely environmental or conservation lens can kind of ignore the individuals within those species and within those ecosystems and that kind of thing. Yeah. What about you, Cassie?
Totally. I guess my journey into veganism and also feminism too was really grounded in, like multi-species relationships. Like growing up, I had pets or companion animals who I really bonded with. when I was 14, I became vegetarian. And that was really made possible because I had a friend who was vegetarian. I think before that, it just wouldn't have occurred to me as a viable option. So there was a specific incident that happened in high school. We're in a computer lab and these boys were bullying her by showing her footage of animal exploitation in slaughterhouses. So, yeah, interesting to see how, you know, boys are kind of weaponizing that violence to bully girls, but I was just so distressed by it that immediately I became vegetarian. And I guess I kind of, you know, was in deep denial of the reality of the harms involved in like the dairy and egg industry. I'm like, it's okay, I'm a vegetarian. It wasn't really until I started to combine feminism and interest in animal liberation that I kind of, the pieces kind of fell into place for me. So reading Carol Adams' Sexual Politics of Meat and really thinking about how violence against animals that occurs in the dairy industry and the egg industry is really a form of kind of gender-based sexual reproductive violence, and thinking, oh my gosh, like this is a multi-species kind of feminist issue and how could I continue doing this? And I guess, again, thinking about the individual animals, the individual cows who are repeatedly, raped and impregnated and having their calves torn off them, it just broke my heart. I think it's really rooted in this kind of feminist ethic of care, which maybe might come up later. But, for me, it was a very emotional thing and rooted in relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are, like, parallels between human or specifically like women's exploitation and oppression and animal oppression. But I definitely agree that probably like the strongest connection is actually the egg and dairy industries. And like, because I guess they're built around sort of the exploitation and control of like female bodies and female reproduction and those kind of issues as well. So I guess it's one of many reasons why we promote veganism rather than vegetarianism on the show, in terms of that a lot of harm within egg and dairy industries as one example beyond just purely meat. What about yourself, Stephen? You mentioned being vegetarian, so how was the transition from vegetarianism to veganism?
To be honest, I've actually found it a lot easier than... So this is only in the last few years, full disclosure. It's taken me a long time to come around to this. And I do think a big part of that is we as humans, we get very stuck in our ways, don't we? And, change feels really difficult. Maybe I, in particular, am a bit of a creature of habit. I'm sure lots of people can relate to that. So somehow becoming vegan just seemed like this huge effort to me that was somehow, unmanageable. And then I actually did it, with Cassie's support as well, I guess. Mm. And it was actually really easy. And I guess it's probably a lot easier now than I'm sure it was in the past for previous generations of vegans. But I think, again, that relational point, that actually if we can do this with other people, that support is so important. But equally, those relationships can at times provide obstacles, can't they? Like, I do think that for me, one of the challenges, one of the things I was scared of was like telling my family and, potentially any like pushback I might get from that, or just, not wanting to be a burden, not wanting to be difficult. And that's a bit of a gendered thing, isn't it? Because it is predominantly women still who have to do the bulk of things like cooking and, asking your mum potentially, for young people, to have to cook, more complex meals or, things she might not be used to. That's an interesting challenge, isn't it? But as I said, once I've actually made that step, I found it incredibly easy. And I'm like, why didn't I do this sooner, basically? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, like, I have heard, like, books around, like, you know, so-called, like, ethical animal consumption. I think, like, Michael Pollan is one of the main names. And I remember just hearing, this was so many years ago, but hearing, like, a critique of, like, oh, you know, I thought maybe after looking into this issue, like, maybe, I'm not sure if it was, like, maybe I should go vegetarian, maybe I should go vegan, I'm not sure. But whatever it was like, oh, but then, like, I found out I had to, like, you know, ask to be sort of catered for and that kind of thing. And I just heard Bill push back against that, like, people with disabilities, for example, and other people, like, that came from a very privileged position of, like, society is set up for you. Mm. And it felt like a real challenge to go, oh, I need something different. Mm. Whereas some people actually, depending on their circumstances, like, have to ask for adjustments all the time as well. Absolutely. But I do think the, like, that social support is really important as well. I know for myself, I was also vegetarian, but for many years, I think about 3 or 4 years. And I remember over the years hearing things like PETA campaigns and then, like, oh, this celebrity is vegan and stuff like that. But it didn't really speak to me because I didn't know them. And yeah, they live a very different lifestyle to what I currently do and did at the time and those kind of things. But it was actually just like getting involved in like an animal activist kind of center. And just meeting other vegans who are just kind of like, you know, inverted commas, ordinary people. Like, they didn't seem superheroes or extraordinary people. And it just seemed like, oh, like, this is an attainable thing. Yes. Yeah. Did you have people around you, Cassie? Because it seemed like you went vegan before Stephen, right? Yeah.
I mean, not too long before, in truth. So okay. I'm relatively new on this journey as well.
Yeah.
I've always been surrounded by vegetarians. In my friendship group in particular. But no, not so much vegans. But I guess the practicalities weren't really an issue for me. I think once I started thinking about the issues, it was just so much easier to become vegan because I was just feeling tormented. Like, I was really tormented by, like, intrusive thoughts about what was happening to these animals. And so becoming vegan just filled me with this sense of relief. And obviously it's aspirational and I go, I have, you know, it's a learning process. But, it's been good.
I feel like often, like, I have had that comment over the years, oh, but aren't you tempted by X, Y, and Z? And I feel like, I know my partner, she puts it as like kind of like the Matrix or something and taking that. I feel like that's been totally corrupted by misogynists and stuff, that whole analogy anyway. But nevertheless, like, that idea of like you see the world totally differently and like, no, I'm not tempted by these things. And like, actually, I definitely relate to, going back a long time, like one of the founders of the Animal Liberation Front, which was kind of a movement breaking the law on behalf of animals. I know Ronnie Lee from the UK, like, he actually did a lot of work in terms of getting like access to vegan food within prisons when he did time for animal liberation crimes, and he actually went on hunger strikes to get vegan food. And I feel like I could quite relate to that. It's not like I'm really into this thing. It's like I can only be, it's like, it's a horrible thought to think about eating animals rather than something I'm tempted by. I feel like once that, and people have different, you know, different relationships towards like how they view, you know, animals. But either way, I feel like, once you kind of philosophically get it, it's not like, oh, I kind of want to eat that. It's kind of like you totally change your thinking around those kinds of foods. I guess as maybe a starting point to think about, animals, but also kind of the non-human world generally, maybe an interesting starting point would be a concept which, I've heard from your work, and I heard recently, but probably only in the last maybe year or two, of petromasculinity. I know that's sort of your, not your area, but something you touch on in your research. So I found that a really interesting concept.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess that is kind of what my work has been focusing on primarily is in recent years is... How are ideas about masculinity and the kind of patriarchal society we live in, how does that actually contribute to the climate crisis? Because, you know, I think we often, rightly, you know, if we associate environmental destruction with anything, we would think of capitalism, right? Industrial capitalism, maybe colonialism as well. We might make those links. But maybe there is still less understanding as well about how this actually links to patriarchy. And so just one, I guess, example of that is that, you know, there is quite a lot of research now to show that actually, you know, on average, and these are huge generalizations, of course, but on average, like, you know, we as men do tend to have higher carbon footprints than women. We are more likely to express like a lack of concern about climate change or even denial of climate change. And I think that, you know, one reason for that among many is that, you know, men are more likely to work as well in you know, environmentally destructive, like extractive industries, whether that's the fossil fuel industry or indeed, you know, in the kind of animal industrial complex as well. So I guess, you know, men's identities are sometimes quite tied up with this existing fossil fuel-based capitalist society that we have. And I think that's what Kara Daggett, who came up with that term of petro-masculinity, was trying to get at, that then, in, you know, in a context where we're living in this incredibly uncertain, scary world, and we're being asked, you know, that world is demanding that we change if we're actually going to be able to continue to survive on this planet. Then actually maybe it's easier to deny that reality rather than to accept and embrace and come to terms with the change that's necessary. I guess on a practical level, it also shows the need for, you know, things like a just transition, right, where there are actually decent alternative jobs for people to go into if they are working in those extractive industries. But also, yeah, we need to think about the role of gender in shaping our attitudes and why, for example, you do see more men perhaps expressing backlash against things like climate action or veganism.
Yeah, and I like something that struck me about that term, and you can correct me if I'm wrong with this interpretation, but I guess for me, I was always like, you know, men who are like driving a massive truck or whatever, doing these destructive things. For me, it was like, you know, I am doing this despite the environmental impact and, you know, like caring about the environment or climate change or whatever, or animals, like that's feminine and that's bad and I'm masculine because I don't care. But like one way I had this concept explained to me from someone else was, it's not just that you don't care. It's actually the fact that it has a high carbon footprint is actually a positive thing in terms of your masculinity. Is that a fair interpretation of the concept?
Thank you. And I should have provided some examples. So thank you for that. But that's it. I think that we associate certain actions which are destructive of the environment, which are really about conquering the environment, that's actually seen as being a powerful way of proving your masculinity, you know, showing that you're a real man. And I think meat eating is actually a great example of that. I don't know if you want to come in there, Cassie, about how those things connect at all, but
Totally. I guess like dominant constructions of masculinity define masculinity as like control over others' bodies. Whether that be the bodies of women or animals. So, you know, meat is this kind of marker of masculinity, of strength, virility. And I guess it's Carol Adams talks about how it's this kind of core symbol of masculinity within a patriarchal context. Like men are less likely to be vegan globally and they eat more meat. So kind of renouncing meat is... Men can be kind of mocked and ridiculed, called soy boys. But equally, it's Adams talks about it as this kind of powerful act of allyship for feminists, because if you're renouncing this symbol of patriarchy, you're saying, you know, you're rejecting that. So it's interesting to think of veganism as a feminist act amongst men. And
And I think also, I guess, to bring it back to the environment, I guess, again, the high environmental footprint that like that, you know, meat and dairy and other animal products have, like, again, from that, within that standpoint of petro-masculinity, like that is a positive thing, right? Yes. Like, so which I think highlights, you know, perhaps something we'll address maybe directly, but maybe like less directly as well, this argument that, you know, we shouldn't bring feminism to animal rights and we just bring everyone in, whether you're a feminist or a misogynist or anywhere in between, and just kind of like a depoliticized form of veganism. Like how rooted meat eating is patriarchy, as you touched on, how connected these issues are, that we actually miss a lot if we don't bring in this this gendered lens. But
can I just jump in?
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Just one quick thing, sorry. I guess a key point for me as well to make is this isn't something like inherent within men, you know, like boys are not born like not caring about others or the nature. You know, actually boys often express deep love and care for nature and for other animals. If anything, it's like we have to unlearn that, you know. We're taught that actually to be a man, to successfully live up to those ideas of manhood in a patriarchal society, you actually have to cast aside those parts of you which, because we associate those things with femininity, and anything associated with femininity is seen as bad. And maybe we can go into that more about how there are these dualisms, you know, and that we as humans are kind of expected to separate ourselves off from nature, from other animals, from our emotions, anything which we associate with nature, and therefore with femininity, we're expected to disconnect ourselves from. And that's actually very damaging for ourselves, you know, as well as for for the planet.
Go ahead, Casey.
Sorry. Yeah, I guess like Steve and I have been doing work within the eco-feminist space, and I think it provides a really good way of kind of conceptualizing the oppression and the interconnected oppression between marginalized groups of humans and animals and nature. And there's this idea that Western thought is structured by this underlying system of interrelated dualisms. So human, animal, man, woman, reason, emotion, masculine, feminine. And one side of that dualism is kind of hierarchized and valorized over the other. But there's also that associative link between the dominant sides of the dualism. So masculinity, transcendence over nature, rationality, femininity, embodiment, animalization. I think it's interesting to think of how these oppressions are not just kind of interconnected as though it's discrete oppressions intersecting, but actually how they're kind of mutually arising and co-constituted. And also that kind of like, you know, we hear a lot about total liberation within that kind of animal liberation movement. Eco-feminists don't necessarily talk about that explicitly, but I think it just provides this alternative model because these oppressions are so enmeshed, like we can't liberate one group without the other.
Absolutely. That's probably a good time to take a break. And I did want to mention as well, if any listeners who are listening live want to text in, you can text in to 0488 809 855 if you have any questions for us, any comments on the show, any intersections you want to add between gender and animals that you can think of yourself. That number again is 0488 809 855. And we're going to go to a song chosen by Stephen, which is Baby, Does Your Heart Sink by Martha. Anything you particularly want to say about the song, Stephen, before we play it?
Well, I selected this song just because I actually know the drummer from Martha, Nathan Stevens Griffin, and it's an all-vegan queer band from the UK, from Durham, where I kind of lived for a long time. That's where I did my PhD. And yeah, Nathan's just an amazing, he's a fellow criminologist and his research is about veganism, and so he's amazing. So I just wanted to, you know, plug his band as well, because they're a great band.
Yeah, that's cool. And I did, on a trip to Leeds a while ago, I did, I didn't see Martha, but saw some bands in a similar kind of a scene. And I guess it's a very like a feminist scene, a very queer scene, but also like quite a vegan scene as well. I know we had at the show watching the bands were eating vegan fried chicken and stuff like that. It was available at the venue. So yeah, very cool scene. So yeah, enjoy the song. This is Martha.
Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. To find out more about our community lunches and programs, check out projectfreshstart.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. We have got the criminologist Cassie Peterson and Stephen Burrell talking about gender and animals today. We just played the song Baby, Does Your Heart Sink by Martha, who you mentioned, all vegan band. Is that right? Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I didn't even know that, but very cool. I definitely know a lot of people in that scene of vegan and making those connections, I guess, between like feminist issues and queer issues and veganism. So Cassie brought up an interesting point just before the break around veganism as feminist action or activism. And I'd be really curious to hear more about that sort of interpretation of veganism. Obviously, lots of people go vegan in a way that is disconnected from that. And we can also hear maybe about the ways in which somehow, like in some ways, like veganism can be framed, oh no, not necessarily in this language, but no, it's not feminist. It's actually based on these other things as well. So yeah, do you want to talk about some of the ways in which veganism can be very consistent within feminism, but then also the way in which some vegans try and distance themselves from a more feminist lens, I guess.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Lots to unpack.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I think it's going to be really interesting. I guess, we can kind of see how gender expectations have kind of infiltrated the animal liberation movement. In the 90s, there's a lot of kind of literature and, about like a feminist ethic of care, kind of critiquing some of those kind of pioneering white male you know, animal liberation theorists like Peter Singer, Tom Reagan, because they kind of went to these lengths to construct these, you know, rational arguments for veganism. Not saying there's no place for those, absolutely. I think there are so many reasons to be vegan. But I guess really denigrating, you know, sentimental, emotional kind of animal lovers. So, yeah, I guess in an ethic of care, vegan feminists kind of argue that actually like care and emotion can and our relationships, like multi-species relationships, can become the basis for veganism. But yeah, I guess not necessarily, right? Because we do see, again, returning to that point about how men becoming vegan could actually be this kind of act of allyship, yeah, multi-species feminist allyship. But yeah, I guess it can also reinforce dominant ideas about masculinity, kind of in terms of, you know, well, actually plant-based proteins are just as good, if not better. Real men can, in fact, be vegan.
Well, I mean, we were watching the, I think you, upon your suggestion, we were watching the documentary, The Game Changers, last night.
Yeah, I thought, two academics looking at, like, gender and animals would have things to say about that.
Well, it makes many powerful arguments, doesn't it, about veganism, which are very convincing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I guess it is doing that, a lot of that, maybe implicitly, or sometimes even explicitly, through the lens of, you know, if you want to be a real man, if you want to be a tough, strong, if you want to successfully live up to these ideas of masculinity, you can do that and be vegan. You know, he really highlights, you know, like male athletes, wrestlers, boxers. There are very few women on the documentary. There are some, but and I guess that is. It's hard, isn't it? Because on a pragmatic level, you can see why that would be tempting. But I do think it is dangerous potentially in the end, because actually, as hopefully we've shown, like, these things are very much interlinked, like patriarchy, these rigid, restrictive ideas about masculinity are actually quite foundational to our destructive relationship with the environment and with non-human animals. So actually, we do need that deeper social change, ultimately, if we want to actually achieve the scale of, like, you know, transformation, which is actually needed to be able to seriously stop these massive harms.
What did you think, Cassie?
I mean, on the one hand, I enjoyed all of these arguments. I felt a bit vindicated as a vegan. I was like, see? But then, yeah, on the other hand, I think that the way that masculinity was constructed, like, I am not inclined towards sports or athleticism, but, like, that runner who was kind of doing... that trail, like, he was really about kind of ascending nature, wasn't he? Like, like dominating and disciplining the human form and being able to conquer nature with the help of plant-based proteins. So it was really that kind of, like, idea of kind of masculine mastery, ascendance over nature, which I think is kind of one of the very ideologies which has led us to this position of animal exploitation in the first place.
Yes, because I think for me a big thing is, you know, we really want to encourage more care, you know, for the planet, for non-human animals, for each other, for ourselves. But at the same time, like, we also need to think about, like, equality there as well, right? And power, because that you can have care but still have inequality. And I guess, like, if you're still promoting that rigid, restrictive idea about masculinity, rooted in that is dominance, right? Dominance over others, dominance over women, over other men, over animals. So, you know, I mean, it's not shaking up the fundamental belief system, which is at the root of this.
It's hard, isn't it? Because we do need immediate action. A part of me is tempted to think, well, let's get people on board by appealing to masculinity. And then hopefully, once they're embedded in the movement, they'll start to change. But yeah, I do think that we just don't want to reinforce patriarchy.
At the same time, I do think there is something to what Cassie just said, though, right? That, like, just by virtue of becoming vegan, like you are actually moving outside of those dominant gender norms. And so perhaps, you know, not inevitably, but it could help you to start to think critically about other aspects of masculinity, for example. And I guess just, you know, because lots of people do say, don't they, that actually, well, I became vegan for health reasons or for environmental reasons, but then I learned more about the plight of animals and I started caring about that a lot more. So it is a complex relationship, isn't it? But I do, just something else just to say based on what we've been talking about is I do think we need to, but just from what Cassie said, we need to highlight our emotional connections to these issues more, I think, because that actually really does mobilize us, I think, doesn't it? So going back to climate change, I think too often we've focused on the science of that and not enough on, well, how does that make people feel, and how can we connect to people's love and care for like their local environment or for the animals that are going to be impacted, for the other people that are going to be impacted, to motivate them into taking action, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like it's interesting you mentioned the runner, because I kind of felt like the runner, so that was like, I think he did ultra marathons, and like I actually felt like he was a little bit sidelined in the documentary because like it was more centered these like massive like, you know, bulky big bicep men, and here is this man who's just like, by nature of the sport he was doing, is like a thinner kind of man, and like I kind of, the way I viewed it is kind of how like both like men who didn't fit this like idealized, exaggerated body type were marginalized, as well as in particular women. There was very few women in the documentary, though there were some, but much less than women as well. And I guess like my, like, I guess the way I try and interpret that documentary in like through hopefully like a more pro-feminist lens is that like, whatever you need to do, like whatever your sport you're doing or just daily requirements, like you can do that on a vegan diet. Like, and so not that you have to be doing those things, but like that it is possible. And I feel like that is maybe like a generous interpretation, but it's not everyone's interpretation of that. But I think like, yeah, I do think we have to like engage with like veganism and all kinds of different people, and all people of all genders and all body types, I think like should consider veganism. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of the, like the philosophy question. Like I agree with Cassie, like I think philosophers should be engaging with the ethics of eating animals and questions of veganism. But I guess where I think all three of our critique lies is like veganism isn't only legitimate among men who fit this ideal body type, or like veganism isn't only legitimate when it's said by a white male philosopher who says they're not an animal lover or that kind of thing as well. Like that's a sort of line I try and walk on these questions. I don't know if either of you got any thoughts on that in terms of how you view that. But
well, I mean, just what you're saying, it does make me think about some of the dilemmas in the kind of pro-feminist men's movement as well, because you know, there is a recognition, right, that men who do actually live up to those dominant ideas of masculinity, some of these sports people, for example, they may be more effective at delivering that pro-feminist message, right? Maybe young men and boys might be more likely to listen to them than they might be somebody like me, you know, an academic who doesn't successfully live up to these norms, even if I wanted to. So again, it's that tension, isn't it, between pragmatism, which I do understand, but at the same time, yeah, like, maybe it's powerful to show that those men do actually have broader emotions, that they can care, and that you know, that those men can gradually unpick some of these norms themselves if they're committed to doing that. But at the same time, yeah, that we really need, it's so important that we broaden our idea of masculinity, right? We show boys that they can be whoever they want to be, and that they don't have to push aside their emotions, their feelings, their connection with other animals or the environment. But actually, yeah, and I think that's a risk, isn't it? If we're just limiting our picture again to these existing ideals of masculinity, then we're just reinforcing those existing pressures.
Yeah. Have either of you seen the TV show Off Campus at all?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
No meaning to.
My partner's been obsessed with that, so I've kind of like indirectly watched a lot of it. But I think it's really relevant to these discussions because it centers ice hockey. It's like ice hockey romance. And it's got men who kind of, you know, meet their like ideal body type for men. And like there's some logic to that, like they are like high level ice hockey players, which is going to perhaps have a, you know, certain kind of body more than others. But nevertheless, like just some of the discussions which my partner's been pushing against some places like Reddit is like, the actors, like these sort of, yeah, strong young men with six packs and stuff like that, talking about feminism, that kind of thing in the show, because the show does focus a lot on like consent and like women's pleasure and like respecting women and these kind of issues from these, like, you know, ice hockey players with six packs as well. And like some people on Reddit said, oh, it's really great that this is coming from like an actor who looks like this. And like, like, yeah, it's like, again, like men of all different, you know, body shapes and sizes should be considering feminism, but it also kind of reinforces, similar to Game Changers, that it becomes more acceptable if this is delivered by a man who adheres to, like, yeah, like ideal masculinity in other ways. And I feel like there's some examples of vegan men doing that, of like, yes, I'm breaching gender norms by becoming vegan, and Cass has already touched on that, but don't worry, like, I'm conforming in other ways, like I'm a bodybuilder, I hook up with lots of women, whatever it may be, but it's like sort of almost overcompensating in other directions.
I worry too about the kind of ableist connotations as well, and like the marginalization of like, well, fat bodies as well, and them not necessarily feeling included within vegan movements. So it's a very kind of normative view of what the optimum kind of human masculine body should look like. So,
we're both huge fans, aren't we, of Heated Rivalry?
That was great.
Similar to what you're saying, and I found that so powerful, like, beautiful. But I guess just, and I love the show, but just one minor critique was maybe like, why does even the non-ice hockey players, you know, seem to have a bulge six packs and amazing
like butts. The smoothie maker. Exactly. Yeah. I have heard that ice skating does work your glutes. I do play ice hockey myself. Not all of our butts look like that, but yeah, there's probably some other things, some squats and stuff going on as well. But yeah, as you say, and I feel like there is such a, like, it's become, like, obviously there's still a lot more pressures on women's bodies within Hollywood and beyond. But it is kind of interesting that in Hollywood it's become such a, like, I'm acting, like, my skill is acting, but it's just an assumed that you have to have a six-pack and you have to be at least, like, ideal body type for men. And, like, it's just funny when you have, like, the so-called, like, nerdy guy who doesn't do sport that kind of thing, and he's got these big biceps and six pack. Like, it doesn't fit with the character at all. But pretty much all male actors kind of have to look like that now.
I do think as well, like, it's so important to remember, like, these gender norms aren't just being reproduced by us as individuals, but they're like embedded across society in our institutions, and, you know, often they're being sold to us, right? Like, companies are using them to sell their products, and obviously that very much applies to the meat and dairy industry, right? They really use these gender norms as a way of trying to convince us to continue buying their extremely harmful products. But but you do see some companies as well trying to, you know, because men don't buy as many, like, you know, plant-based you know, fake meat type products, that maybe they should use some of that masculine kind of messaging or imagery as a way of appealing to men. But I was also thinking about what you were saying as well about, I think there is a risk, isn't there, when veganism becomes co-opted also into that kind of healthism, you know? Because is that kind of, you know, that we do see more people becoming vegan for health reasons, which, and I guess obviously that leads to a good outcome, even if their motivations might not be what we want. But then is there a risk that then actually veganism actually ends up being used to reinforce these really, you know, horrible pressures, particularly on women, as you say, for their bodies to look a certain way?
I mean, I have heard some people talking about how, you know, they're worried about how veganism might kind of exacerbate disordered eating if someone does have a history of eating disorders, which is really problematic. It's interesting too, just to think about how different meat products are marketed at different genders. So, because we're talking about like red meat and masculinity, right? But like, conversely, we see lean white meats and dairy marketed at women who are supposed to have these very slim bodies. And it's interesting because I think men are kind of getting bulkier and bulkier, but then women are just getting smaller and smaller with the rise of Ozempic and
Didn't you show me, Cassie, like a website or a series of memes about like women who just look like they're experiencing extreme pleasure when eating a salad? Like in all of this marketing that somehow it's like orgasmic to have a salad.
It's kind of white women just in ecstasy eating salad.
Yes.
And I think there's also, I feel like it's also just not a very like strong or sustainable argument for veganism, because I've seen that again probably more with women over the years, like Peter's campaign and stuff, and it's like, here is this like conventionally attractive woman who is vegan. So it's like, oh, you can be like conventionally attractive as a woman and you can be vegan, but then it's also, well, here's this other woman who's conventionally attractive and he's not vegan. So and like same as like, oh, don't worry, you can be like this like, you know, big guy with big biceps and a six pack and be vegan. It's like, yeah, that's true, but here's this other guy who's not vegan who also looks like that. So I don't feel it's very strong. Like, as much as a problem that in many ways, like just practically, it doesn't really work as an argument either. Yeah,
totally. Yeah. I think too, like when we see people who have non-normative bodies, like so fat people are animalized. So there's this idea of like hedonism, like, you know, you cannot control what you eat, you can't control your body, you're a glutton because you're fat. And I think that that's really connected to the same ideology that oppresses animals, because we see the animalization of these marginalized groups.
And even animal groups can even contribute to that. I can think of a something I wrote about in my PhD thesis actually was Peter had a billboard with like a bigger woman that said like save the whales or something like that. God. So they were actually doing the animalizer, even though they're an animal rights group as well. Jeez. So that can happen within the movement as well. We better take another song though. So we're going to play, this is one I've chosen. So this is You Hear Yets by Destroy Boys featuring Mannequin Pussy and Scowl. I did want to put in a warning, like it does cover for those listening live themes of harassment of women, men not taking women's consent seriously, so not in a graphic way or anything like that, but those topics can be upsetting, so just a heads up about that. But what is particularly, I think, relevant to our discussion is there is a lyric, don't look me up and down like I'm a piece of meat. So I thought that was an interesting connection based on what we're discussing today.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science, and scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Radical Radio. We are discussing gender and animals on the show today. We just heard the song You Hear Yets by Destroy Boys, which had the lyric, don't look me up and down like I'm a piece of meat. And I guess just something that was interesting to me, I did just have a quick look after hearing that song about whether like the van was vegan or anything like that. And I couldn't find anything either way. But yeah, I think more generally, I feel like, yeah, I guess we've been so far a lot sort of pushing back on animal movements not taking feminism seriously. Mm-hmm. But I think also, I guess the flip side of that, I feel like when, you know, people are making those connections of like women are being treated like animals or kind of vice versa, I feel like there's also a responsibility to challenge the idea of animals being like objectified and that kind of thing as well. And yeah, I know like yourself, Cassie, and Carol Adams is not just saying like women are treated like animals and that's bad for women. It's also about challenging the animal oppression as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, to use like animal abuse, animal oppression as like a metaphor for human oppression, it's not okay. Mm-hmm. Unless you are actually advocating for animal liberation as well and drawing attention to that. Yeah, animals are not just symbols or metaphors, they are.
Yeah, yeah. And I have heard that quite a bit, and we spoke about this off air, but about, being within like human rights movements for many years, but also hearing like the speeches and that kind of thing through a vegan lens are just so many times of like, you know, we were treated no better than animals, or we were treated like animals and that kind of thing, and actually thinking about, well, why is it acceptable to treat animals that way as well? But we are going to finish off with a few plugs for more from Stephen and Cassie. Maybe we'll start off with the Now and Men podcast, which Stephen does, but also Cassie has been a guest on. So we'll put a link up to that episode specifically in the notes so you can hear more from Stephen and Cassie, but also then you can check out more episodes as well. But do you want to tell us a bit about the podcast?
Yeah, thanks, Nick. We've been doing it for about 5 years now, myself and a colleague back in the UK where I'm originally from. And I guess we kind of we started off originally because that was just at the time, you know, when things like the manosphere were starting to become more and more mainstream and influential, and just cognizant of the fact, you know, there is a real lack of like more positive pro-feminist oriented content out there aimed at, you know, men and boys, really. And I just go back to one of the points I was making earlier. You know, we are living in a time of multiple crises. Like, we're feeling very, many of us feel very uncertain and precarious and alienated. And that's, you know, that's being exploited, I think, isn't it? Often by far-right authoritarian figures, people on places like the Manosphere for their own ends. They're really exploiting these insecurities that many young men and boys have. And I would just say, you know, I think things like veganism, caring for the planet, caring for other animals is actually a really positive way forward, an alternative for men and boys, you know, which is about interconnection and interdependence and care for others and ourselves. And the current way of doing things, this patriarchal way of doing things, it's terrible for animals, it's terrible for the planet, and it's terrible for us as men, as humans, and it's completely unsustainable. So it's in our own interests, as well as everybody else's, to embrace feminism, embrace veganism, and work to create a different kind of society. And so that's what we try and highlight with the podcast, I suppose.
Great. And I know, Cassie, you're involved with the International Association Vegan Sociology, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, do you want to tell us a bit about that, the blogs, etc.?
Yeah, sure. So I guess it's just a community of sociologists who are making vegan scholarship kind of accessible to everyone. And there's a blog that I'm currently the editor for. You can find it online. just these kind of short posts that really highlight that intersection between activism and academia. So, worth checking out if you're interested.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely some great. And I personally, subscribe to that. And there's definitely, some great blog posts. Again, I've read lots from Corey Wren and others on that. So, check that out. And even if you're not an academic, I feel like it's quite accessible, quite short, and give you an introduction to these important ideas. I think, I guess also the other issue you brought up, I think podcasts, I have heard like podcasts are a key sort of gateway towards the manosphere and right-wing politics generally as well. So good to hear you and others are pushing back against that. I also wanted to mention Now and Men. Again, check out all the episodes. But for myself as an ice hockey player, I particularly enjoyed the episode with someone, a Canadian guy, talking about ice hockey and Heat or Driver and stuff like that. So that's about an episode I can particularly recommend. There's something which came to mind, and this is maybe too big to cover in a minute or two, but just, I was curious for any thoughts on this, Stephen, of like sometimes there's discussion of like needing positive male role models and that kind of thing. And I'm just wondering, like, I always have the thought of like, do we need to like view it through that gendered lens, or is it more just like having like people who are role models and that kind of thing? And like, I don't know, like I kind of see both angles, but do you have any thought on that idea of like viewing things through like, I need a man to display good mass, or like, you know, there's even the thing of like, oh, like maybe like a kid who has two mums, or they need positive male role models. And I'm always just like, but do they? Do you have any thoughts on that? It's a huge question.
It's a great question. It's an important question. I mean, of course, I think it is good to see that men can, you know, behave in all sorts of different ways and don't, you know, have to live up to these rigid, restrictive ideas of masculinity. To see that in practice, I think, is really powerful. But no, I don't think that boys and men, you know, that we can somehow only, you know, learn from other men at all. And I think we need to challenge that idea, don't we? Like, boys should be learning from women, and many boys do learn so much from women. And often, it is actually relationships with women or girls in their lives that do lead them to start thinking critically about some of these pressures around masculinity and questioning things like violence against women. Like, those relationships with women often have a huge impact on us, and I think we need to be more cognizant of that. I don't know if there's anything you want to add, Cassie, about just the importance of relationships and to motivating us to become active, I suppose.
I guess it does have a flow-on effect, doesn't it? Like, since we've become vegan, we've had family members who have adopted veganism, or even just eating less animal products. Relationships are really important.
And I guess maybe for your listeners, right, I feel like maybe that's a hopeful message as well, isn't it, that we can, I feel like the biggest influence we can potentially have sometimes is on the other people in our lives. Like, if there's anyone who does make us think differently, it isn't some distant person, some athlete, some celebrity. It's actually the people in our lives, our friends, our family, and so on. And so, maybe we can't always convince people to become vegan overnight as we might want, but just, you know, bringing up these ideas in an empathetic, compassionate way and talking to people about it, I really think that does have an impact.
Totally.
Yeah, well, that's maybe a nice note to finish on. Yeah, stay tuned for Rotations coming up next for some more music. You can email us with feedback. We're fozradio@proton.me, or contact us on social media if you have any feedback on the show. We're going to finish up with another one that Stephen has chosen. This one is The Scars of the Land by King Apathy. Anything you want to say about the song, Stephen?
Well, just quickly, I'm a huge fan of metal music, and but unfortunately metal music often doesn't have the same kind of political values that I might like. But there are some bands out there who are vegan, and so King Apathy are one of those. And I think, you know, the song title, The Scars of the Land, is quite, you know, quite clear. And as somebody whose background is in researching violence, I think it is really important that we think more about the harms we do to the planet, to other animals, as violence. So I think the song is quite powerful in that way.
Yeah, I definitely know Antagonist AD are a metalcore band, or vegan, and have a lot of animal like scenes in their lyrics. But yeah, we'll go to the song now. Stay tuned for Rotation. Thanks for listening, and thanks for joining me, Cassie and Stephen.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Stay tuned for Rotations.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.